Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. This is the Joe Starkey Show. Josh Taylor in today for Joe Starkey. And right now on the Fan Hotline, we've got Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette talking some Steelers. The Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Ray, let's start here, and I want to get into this because, granted, it's something that happened earlier in the week, but there were a couple different pieces of information that kind of stuck out to me as far as Cam Sutton's suspension. It was one of the things that you pointed out was that Cam Sutton waived his right to appeal, so he's immediately available for that Week 8 game against the Giants. First of all, also, Ray, by the way, good morning.
Well, good morning. Good to be with you, Josh. Yeah. I think first time being on one of your shows, so good to be with you.
And it's first time I think we've talked in a while, because I'm not in practice that often these days on the South Side. I'm a house cat now, so good to talk to you. But something I think you pointed out, I think it was on Twitter at the time it was announced, that he waived his right to appeal. Did that shock you, Ray, that he waived his right to appeal? Does it seem like more of a concession for you?
Yeah, I mean, in all of those cases, you know, the way the NFL handles these, Josh, it's always kind of murky. You know, there's a lot of gray area there. But, you know, I go back to Ben Roethlisberger when he violated personal conduct policy, and he pled that down from 6-4. So everyone was thinking, okay, whatever Cam Sutton gets, he'll be able to appeal. But then it came out, you know, it was a minute or two later that I found out, you know, he waived his right to an appeal. And what that tells me, and I'm reading between the lines here, because again, the league doesn't disclose a lot of this stuff, but I think they felt what he did was a fairly serious offense. And I think through back channels, they probably told him, hey, listen, you know, we can give you 12, you can plead it down and appeal it. Maybe it'll be 8, maybe it'll be 10. Or we could just give you 8 and you can't appeal it. So I think it was one of those deals. But, yeah, to answer your question, I was a little bit surprised, and I was a little bit surprised at the length. But, again, Josh, you know, Goodell doesn't you know, he's pretty harsh when it comes to, you know, these alleged domestic violence incidents. You can go back to Ray Rice and some of those others. So looking back, maybe we all shouldn't be surprised that it was half a season.
Now, with that said, when this signing first happened, we knew this was kind of in the rearview mirror, that this was something that eventually was going to creep up on us. But at the same time, you looked at the depth chart and you say, okay, well, now you have Cam Sutton here, and maybe this, you kind of shift things around, whether it's outside, inside, nickelback, who starts, who's on the outside. But now we know what the date is for Cam Sutton to return. So what does that do as far as the depth chart in your mind, and how does it shift things, Ray?
Yeah, Josh, I mean, there's, as far as the off-season training camp roster, there's not a lot of option with guys with a lot of NFL experience. You know, Josiah Scott has started a few games in this league. Graylin Arnold, the same thing, but not a lot of experience. You know, there's a lot of talk in the spring about Beanie Bishop, you know, an experienced guy, played a lot of college football, most recently at West Virginia. You know, I think he'll have a shot to, you know, get on the radar in training camp, but you know, if by mid-August none of those guys are standing out, I think we're back to square one with the Patrick Peterson talk. It was a topic all throughout March and April because he was let go in mid-March. Hasn't signed anywhere else yet, but I think a guy of that stature, a guy of that caliber who is versatile, who can play inside and outside, I think that would be a nice add for half a season. And to be honest with you, I don't think you're going to have to pay all that much money. You might not get him for the vet minimum, but I think he could probably be had for, you know, $3, maybe $4 million a year.
Ray Fittipaldo from the Post-Gazette joins me right now on 93.7 The Fan. Ray, we're at that point. Austin and I were talking about this because when you get to, you know, mini camp and OTAs and you look at training camp, you're like, it's 7-8 weeks down the pike. You still got a couple months. Well, we're 2 weeks away. We're right on top of it at this point. And it's going to be back to those days where standing outside, 80, 90 degree heat, watching a bunch of guys running around, fans will be there. Now, granted, when you're there, when you get the opportunity to take in the atmosphere, it is a great atmosphere. I don't discount that. I don't always miss the 90-degree day standing outside in the heat to watching practice happen, but there's the mainstays of camp, right? There's the run test. There's the arrival when all the players show up. You wonder who's going to have the, you know, the colorful arrival. There's the backs-on-backers drill. Everybody has the one mainstay that they look forward to. Mine is backs-on-backers. What's your mainstay camp ritual, Ray?
Backs-on-backers, undoubtedly, but I love to watch the O-line, D-line pass rush drills because I think you learn a lot about the O-lineman and the D-lineman, but there is no substitute for the backs-on-backers. As we become more conscious of head injuries, you know, anyone who played football in my era, high school, college football, you have the old Oklahoma drills. This is as close to it. They try to keep the head out of it, but it's violent stuff, and it's always the highlight of camp for me. I know they do it twice. They do it once, I think, first, second day of pads, and then they do it again at the night practice at Latrobe Memorial Stadium. But, for me, backs-on-backers is the drill to watch if you're a football fan.
If I'm going to training camp, I got to see people hit people. It's the thing that has to be in my mind. So backs-on-backers is definitely my pick. But I wanted to ask that question to kind of shift to something else. And this was a bit of a change when the schedule got released a month or so ago.
Yeah.
But traditionally speaking, Ray, we're used to seeing those guys kind of have like a light walkthrough in the morning and then practices in the afternoon. Well, now we find out of the 15 practices on campus at St. Vincent, 10 of them are starting at 10:30 in the morning. Just what does that do as far as maybe how this affects how things go? I know it's going to be an earlier time for fans to get there. That creates a lot more traffic for people trying to get in and see everything. But how do you think it shifts it as far as how the practices go and how it affects the players and how the schedule maybe affects what the results might look like?
Yeah, so there's a new strength and conditioning staff this year, and I think those guys went to the coaching staff and said, hey, listen, we think the players will be better nourished if they're practicing early. And then this way they feel like eating later in the day. A lot of times when you practice in the afternoon, all you feel like doing, if it's 90, 95 degrees out, all you feel like doing at 6 o'clock at night is hydrating. Whereas if you hydrate in the afternoon, get a little lunch and then eat a big dinner, I think it's much better for those guys to keep on some good weight. So that's sort of the football aspect of this, but you're right, for the fans, it's going to be different. And you will still have those Saturday and Sunday workouts at the regular time, you know, late afternoon. So, you know, the traditionalists can go out there on the weekends and still have it the way it used to be. But, yeah, I mean, fans are going to have to get up earlier. They're going to have to fight traffic. It's going to be different. But, when I first started covering this team, and when Bill Cowher was here, they would practice twice a day, once in the morning, once in the afternoon. So it's not unprecedented, but it certainly is different, from the way Mike Tallman has done it during his tenure.
Now, there is one positive from the media standpoint. And I had to think about this because I thought back to my days as a reporter and a field producer. There's one thing that the schedule shift does help as far as practice being in the morning, because now it frees up more time, Ray, for my favorite part of being training camp, that's lunch.
Yeah,
freeze it up for lunch. But yeah, also, sorry, go ahead.
St. Vincent is, they are known for that. They got that new cafeteria too, which is excellent.
Yes.
If you're a student at St. Vincent, I'm telling you, you got it better than 95% of the college students who go to school elsewhere. But
amen.
Yeah. Yeah. For what, 6 weeks, Josh, we get to eat like the NFL players, and that's not bad.
And you feel heavy the rest of the day, and you almost don't feel bad for it. But it also, as I say, you know, I'm worried about lunch because I always am. But at the same time, and you understand this, and those who have been in that particular position, that's when you get a lot of your interviews. You're catching guys coming out of the cafeteria. You're catching guys going in. You're catching guys going out. That's where I got probably, I still call this probably the greatest interview of my lifetime, of my career. I caught Mean Joe Green coming out of lunch, and he gave me this crazy, weird stare, and he's like 5 minutes, like really even voice. He talked to me for 10. But that's the point where you get a lot of those interviews as media, talking to guys. So it does feel to me like if they're practicing in the morning, they get lunch, maybe they might be a little bit more talkative when they come out of lunch.
Yeah, and listen, the training camp also is really good for access. You know, we got really good access with the Steelers during the season, but you get them on the field after practice. You know, so you, whoever has like the highlight reel catch of the day or whoever had a really good day, maybe you get them on the practice field, and then you have another opportunity at lunchtime, like you said, to you know, to get some more interviews. So, you know, I don't think Steelers fans know how lucky they have it. Like, our access as TV and radio and print guys, it's really good. And it's really good if you compare it to across the league. So, yeah, there should be plenty of stories to come out of this training camp. I don't want to say it was boring, like when you had Ben and Bell and AB, but you kind of knew what the roster was going to be. But there's competition at both tackle positions, competition at center, competition at number two receiver. I mean, there are tons of storylines for the fans to follow here in another couple weeks.
Ray, I just talking and telling some of the stories about training camp actually make me wish I was going back this year. But good to talk to you about it. Hopefully you stay cool out there and enjoy the lunch, because I'm going to miss that part. But good to talk to you again, as always. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Josh. Talk to you later.
Ray Fittipaldo. And Ray is one of the mainstays, man. Like, when I first started going out covering training camp, I want to say my first training camp, I think, was 2010, maybe 2009. And Ray was one of the mainstays that I remember being there. The Ray Fittipaldos. The of all people, the Jeff Hathorns of the world.
I mean, stunning.
Jeff Hathorn is a mainstay in any category, because Jeff is just the greatest human ever. But, you know, Ray was one of the guys that I remember seeing out there. And being just a wobble-kneed kid trying to talk to players coming out. I'll tell this Joe Green story right now, because I got a few minutes. Austin, you'll probably appreciate this. I was a field producer at the time at WTAE, and I'm out there. It was me and a couple other photographers. I'm up there. I'm out there with John Hoffman. Shout out to John. Kerry Toso. And I want to say TJ Hott was there. It was a handful of guys, and they're all shooting practice. And in between, as Ray was talking about, you catch players. Now, granted, they would have the walkthrough in the morning, they would have lunch, and then you catch them coming out of lunch before practice in the afternoon. And some guys would talk to you after lunch. Some are in a good mood after they eat, they'll talk to you. Some guys, you know, they might be trying to get to the bathroom real quick after they eat, I don't know. Or they might just be more focused on practice and maybe not as talkative. It varies from person to person. But then you'll catch a coach here and there. You'll get a position coach. You'll get a coordinator. Maybe you catch somebody you can talk to. And then every once in a while, you'll get someone in town visiting who is one of the most transcendent players in the game's freaking history, like Joe Green walking out of lunch, which is what happened to me. I've told this story quite a bit at like different speaking engagements that I've had, but Austin, we're waiting outside. Joe Green comes out, and John Hoffman, for those who work in local TV news, if you've seen my old coworker, John Hoffman. Austin, John Hoffman is probably no taller than 5'7", 5'8". Not a big dude. But Hoffman is afraid of no one. So John tells me, hey, let's go get Mean Joe. I'm like, I don't know, Hoffman. I don't know, dude. He's like, come on, let's go get Mean Joe. I'm like, I don't want him to eat me. Like, no, can we not? He's like, come on, let's go get Mean Joe. So I walk up to him, and this is probably the most scared I've ever been in my entire life. I don't know how I did this. I'm like, excuse me, Joe, Josh Taylor, you know, with the one of the TV stations. Can we have a few minutes? He looks at me, Austin, with like the most stern, I'm going to punch you in the face looks ever. And he says, do I know you? To this day, The response I have, I don't know how I came up with it. I probably should have crapped myself and ran. I probably should have felt it running down my leg and just cowered in safety. Somehow, the only thing I managed to do was stick my hand out and say, not yet.
That's a great response.
That's all I had. It's all I could muster. Do I know you? Not yet. He shook my hand. He same look, dead in the face. 5 minutes. He talked to me for like 10. Couldn't have been nicer. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. We ended up talking on camera, and he gave me such great stuff. And we asked, like, we asked him questions about, like, training camp when he played, and we asked him about, like, what practice used to be like with Chuck, how Chuck Noll was, stuff like that. But we also talked to him about, like, you know, the fan environment and people being around. And he was saying, you know, it wasn't like this when we were here. He's like, I don't remember much of that happening, but having the fans there, he didn't mention how it was a cool thing to have. But that was my training camp interview, like, lunch, like, marquee story. It doesn't get better than that. I'm never going to top that as far as interactions with legends go.
The greatest Steeler of all time.
Oh, without
question. Not
yet. Without question. Do I know you? Not yet. It's all I had, Austin. I had to lean on it.
It's a perfect response. I mean, truly. It's a confident response,
oh my
more
gosh.
Than anything.
Oh, my God. I was so like, pleased with myself afterwards. I'm like, how did I just do that? I don't know. It was like out-of-body experience. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7TheFan. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Also, hit us up on the fan text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We have been talking quite a bit in this show, especially in the first hour, about Paul Skeens and that game yesterday in Milwaukee. Just so happens the replay is on in the monitor in our studio. And you guys have been calling in to talk about it. So let's keep it rolling. We'll take a break here, but we're taking your phone calls, 412-928-9370. How did you feel about Paul Skeens being pulled in the eighth inning? Did you think he should have gotten at least one more inning? I know some people wanted to see the no-hitter happen. I didn't think that was a possibility, but I did want to see him at least go out and pitch the eighth, try to get you three outs closer to a win.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan, this is the Joe Starkey Show. Josh Taylor in today for Joe Starkey. Taking your phone calls, 412-928-9370. HM3 Partners Independence Fund presents Celebrity Care Fest, benefiting UPMC Children's Hospital Foundation. Two nights of star-studded entertainment, July 26th and 27th. Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo, Smokey Robinson, and a superstar artist so big we can't say it here. Learn who at hm3.org. Tickets on sale at hm3.org. Now, at the top of the show, we talked about how yesterday's game with Milwaukee emerged. And if you're near a monitor and you have Sportsnet Pittsburgh available, you can watch the replay right now. Matter of fact, that play where Nick Gonzalez caught that pop in shallow center field with a diving Jack Sawinski right behind him, it scared me hearing it on the radio. It scared me even more seeing it right now in living color. But we were talking about how that game went about and getting into that seventh inning. Paul Skeens, six pitches, gets through the seventh inning, No hitter still intact, only allowed a couple base runners, hadn't allowed a run, 11 strikeouts. He had retired 16 guys in a row. So the opportunity comes. Do you bring him out for the eighth inning? At the time, I thought it was still after the sixth inning, so I'm thinking, oh, he's not going out for the seventh. But then we realized, oh, wait, they're already in the eighth inning. And I was surprised when it didn't happen. Did I expect a no-hitter to happen? No, because he was already at 99 pitches through seven. If you're projecting 12 to 15 pitches ahead, you're talking between 111 and 114 after eight innings. That's probably when you're totally pulling the plug without any questions asked. So I don't think a no-hitter was in the cards for nine innings at least. Combined no-hitter is still in play, but not a one-man no-hitter. And by the way, speaking of combined no-hitters, in about 20 minutes, we will talk about the 27th anniversary of the last Pirates no-hitter, which has happened to be 27 years ago today, and that one was a combined no-hitter. I thought Paul Skenes should have stayed in the game for the eighth inning. I thought he was pitching well enough, even though he hit 99 pitches through seven. And Austin Beck told our producer, I think he pointed out a couple great things. He's already eclipsed that number a couple times this season. The control that he had, the weak contact he was getting, there was no reason to think that he wouldn't have been in control in the eighth inning as opposed to, I don't know, the previous seven, perhaps. Plenty of evidence would suggest as much. And I'll come back to this because I said this before. Of all the things Paul Skenes has done, of all the history he's made, or at least, you know, met or even eclipsed, there's still something that sticks out to me. And after yesterday, this still rings true. After 11 career starts, Paul Skenes has not left a game with his team trailing. If that is not enough to have faith in your guy to go out for one more inning, especially at 99 pitches through seven, just one more inning. I didn't need him to go nine. But if you're on the road in a division game against the division leader, you're up 1-0 and you can take a series before the All-Star break with your best guy on the mound. It just feels like, if for no other reason, get him out there for the eighth, because it gets you that much closer to getting that win you're trying to get once again, your best guy on the mound. Now, if you want to go with Chapman in the ninth, if you want to go with Holderman in the ninth, both of your options look good. But guess what? It also gets you closer to that combined no-hitter, which, oh yeah, by the way, last time that happened was 27 years ago. Taking your phone calls, 412-928-9370. Andy in Ohio, you've been holding for a while, but we appreciate you. You're on the fan.
Yeah, hey, just for selfish reasons, I'm like everybody else in Pittsburgh. Hell, probably Milwaukee fans that was at the game. I just wanted to see him go one more inning.
How awesome was that to see the Milwaukee fans like actually applaud him and like clap for him? How cool was that?
That was pretty classy, I thought. And the state of the game right now, it's sad. I just don't think there's a manager in baseball that would have let him go back out there.
That's fair. That's a fair point. That's totally
and I got
true.
A quick story about an old-timer I asked. His name's Tom Chipper Colder. He lives in my town here in Toronto, Ohio.
Nice, Toronto, Ohio. Okay.
He played for the Cardinals when Bob Gibson was there. He later got traded to the Mets down the road, but he started with the Cardinals. Gibson's on the mound late in the game. Red Shanning's come out of the dugout. Before he got to the mound, Gibson told him, "Red, get the hell out of here. I'm not coming out of this effing game." He said Red Shanning didn't say a word, just turned around and went right back to the dugout. Gibson completed the game and got a win.
I love it. Thanks for the call, Andy. That's a great story. Tim McCarver has a lot of those stories, too, talking about Bob Gibson coming out of games. And Andy's got a good point. This is not just a Pirates thing. And I got to reiterate that. I got to underscore it. I got to put it in bold and italics and put it in capital letters. This is not just a Pirates thing. This is not just a Derek Shelton thing. This is not just a Ben Cherington thing. There are teams around baseball, many of them. I wouldn't say all, but I'd say the majority of managers and front offices by extension that would have probably done the same thing the Pirates did yesterday. And it is one of those things where the game has shifted. And I have to remind people, we're living in an age now where the numbers dictate everything. It used to be where you just saw things happen and then you looked at the numbers later. That's not the case anymore. The numbers dictate the actions now. You have a much more statistically inclined landscape of the game. you have a lot more teams that are more concerned with the analytics side of it because they use it to predict certain things. They use it to forecast certain things. And they use it to try to avoid certain pitfalls. Because the converse of the argument that I'm making, that I thought about, the converse of the argument I thought back all the way, and I know I'm dating myself, but I thought all the way back to 2002. I believe it was the ALDS in 2002. Boston and the Yankees. Grady Little comes out to the mound. I want to say they were in Yankee Stadium. Grady Little comes out to the mound. He asks Pedro Martinez, do you want to stay in the game? And Martinez says yes. And he kept him in the game in the middle of the inning. Well, that inning ends. And Martinez says afterwards, I thought my day was over. I thought I was done. But Grady Little decided, well, we're in a game where we have our best guy going. And Martinez had already eclipsed 100 pitches at this point. Now, granted, there was no-hitter, no perfect game on the line. It was just a playoff game in New York facing the Yankees, and you're trying to beat a rival in a huge game. And Grady Little's thought process was, well, I got my best guy. I want my best guy back out there for the next inning. Well, he goes back out. Pedro Martinez, who thought his day was over, goes back out. Yankees put up a big rally, tie the game, and eventually win it. So that's the counter argument to the argument that we're making here. However, the difference was Pedro Martinez had already long surpassed 100 pitches. Plus, if you went into the numbers, and this was a case that Theo Epstein, who eventually became the general manager, made. If you look at the numbers, Martinez, after he surpassed 100 pitches, got markedly worse after that point. Now, that's to say that each pitcher, and I said this earlier in the show, each pitcher is different. You know what each pitcher's threshold is. We had a caller who mentioned it before. Bailey Falter, 85, 90 pitches, he's out. Each pitcher has a threshold. But I say that to say this. I don't think we had seen Paul Skenes at that threshold yesterday. I don't think we saw him at that point where he was in the Top Gun, Archer, Lana danger zone. If you know, you know. I don't think he was there yet. And it's evidenced by the fact that he threw 6 pitches in the 7th inning and got through it. And he had retired 16 guys in a row. So do I think he had reached that threshold yet? No. So I thought he could have at least pitched the 8th. I was not thinking no hitter 9 innings under any circumstances, but I thought the 8th should have at least been on the table. Leon Butler, you're on the fan. You there, Lee?
Hello?
Yes. How are you, Lee?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good.
Hey, just one quick thing. I think I don't have anything to add to what you just said. I agree all the way. I just loved Skenes' professionalism and
yes.
The maturity that he showed by not causing trouble with getting pulled out of the game. He's at the top of his game. He's at the top of the league. Everybody's talking about him every night on MLB Network. To just take that on the chin, be humble about it, pass it off to the next guy, that speaks to his character, and I think it's going to contribute to his longevity as a player.
That's a good point, Lee, and appreciate the call. This was the one thing I liked about Paul Skenes, because Paul Skenes, before he pitched at LSU, he had transferred from the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. He was at Air Force before he was at LSU. Comes from a military family. Has that background of discipline, of respect. He has that ethos. And that's the kind of ethos you want in any kind of setting. That's the kind of ethos you want in any particular walk of life.
Josh, we have breaking news.
Uh-oh, here we go.
From the Pittsburgh Pirates. A heat wave is about to hit Texas. Paul Skenes has been named the starting pitcher for the National League at the All-Star
game.
There it is.
I guess that kind of strengthens Derek Shelton's decision to pull him after 7 innings.
Round of applause for Torey Lovello in the National League. They got it right.
Jeff Passan was lobbying for this for days, weeks even.
I didn't think that it was even possible about 2 weeks ago. But if he continued to shove, yesterday is what put it over the top.
I think so.
You could not deny him the opportunity to start the All-Star game after that performance.
I totally think you're right. I think there was no more evidence you needed. And how many performances have we seen him have like that? Once again, and I'll point this out again, Baseball Reference, their database, has three guys, three, who have had outings like Paul Skeens had yesterday. Only three of them have happened, and they've had three guys who have done it twice. And they have only three guys in their database. And Paul Skeens was the only one who did it within the last 100 years. The other two guys pitched in the early 1900s. That's the level that Paul Skeens is on right now. I think that's why it's undeniable that he needed to go to the All-Star break, or All-Star break, go to the All-Star game. I think it's just absolutely, it was a no-brainer, Austin. Absolute no-brainer.
Especially because, I mean, who really cares about watching Ranger Suarez pitch at this point? Like, his last three starts have kind of ruined his chances. His ERA's gone up by, like, I think 80 points.
Oh, yeah.
And Skeens just continues to dominate. If you give Skeens the same amount of innings as Ranger Suarez, his ERA is significantly lower.
If Paul Skeens is qualified, he leads all of MLB in ERA because his ERA right now is 1.9. If he was qualified for the ERA title, he would be literally the only starter in baseball with an ERA under 2.
You know, Josh, I'm not a big sports bettor. I've gotten a little bit more and more into it. It's a very good bet right now to bet Paul Skeens to win the Cy Young.
We have a mutual friend of ours who just happens to work in this space.
Huge sports bettor.
Who said the same thing. He said, hey, he's moving up the list. I want to say he's what, second or third
on
the list now?
Plus 1,100 right now.
If you're going to jump on it, now's a good time.
20 wins you what, like 240?
That sounds 220? Pretty good to me. If you're going to jump on it, now might be the time to do it. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. This is the Joe Starkey Show. Josh Taylor in for Joe. In the last segment, just a few moments ago, the news has come down. The Pirates have announced Paul Skeens is your starting pitcher for the National League in the 2024 Major League Baseball All-Star Game. There we go. There it is, Austin. It was a foregone conclusion before. It was something we expected before. And you had people around baseball that were clamoring for this. Jeff Passan, national baseball writer, he might as well have just been outside the door of MLB's offices with a sign just picketing for Paul Skeens to start the All-Star game. He's been calling for this literally for weeks. And now we're going to get it.
Yeah, and for him, one of the biggest voices in baseball, he even said that there was some hesitation by people in baseball to let a guy that, well, has only made 11 starts instead of somebody who's pitched since opening day. Are they really qualified to pitch the All-Star game? Are they worthy to get the ball in that situation? Some people saying, well, he's just a rookie. He's not a veteran. He has to earn it. He's the best pitcher in baseball. He's earned it in just 11 games.
Now, see, my counter argument to that was I felt the exact same way, but then I had to think back. Because we already talked about Pedro Martinez starting in 98 and just mowing the lineup down. Because that's what I see in my mind happening with Paul Skeens on the mound. But you hear the argument of, well, he hasn't thrown that many games, he hasn't pitched that much, maybe he should be somebody else that's more tenured. But bear in mind, Austin, now this is where I'm going to date myself. Yeah, I'm an 80s baby. I'm in my 40s now. I'm old enough to remember 1995. I'm old enough to remember Hideo Nomo. Yes, he was 26 at the time. But he was a rookie in Major League Baseball. And he started the All-Star game for the National League against, of all people, Randy Johnson, who was still with Seattle at the time. Randy Johnson was the American League starter, and Hideo Nomo, a rookie, albeit 26 years old, but a rookie in the National League, was a National League starter. So I agree with Jeff Passan. You can talk about it being other guys that are more established and more possibly more deserving, but name me a guy that's better right now. That's Jeff Passan's case. That's my case. I think they made the right decision. Paul Skeens starting the All-Star game. Do you like this decision? Skip and Mount Lebanon, you're on the Fan.
Hey, Josh. I'm really enjoying the show.
Appreciate you.
I'll tell you, I'm an older guy, and I remember when Dwight Gooden came up And I remember when Kerry Wood came up.
Yes.
And they were, like, just stuffed guys that just wanted to strike everybody out. It just overpowered you. The thing to me, the most impressive thing about Skeens is he's that guy, but he's like the older Tom Seaver that knows how to pitch. And it's like he's playing chess. He'll get a guy the first time, and he'll use a whole different sequence the second time. You can almost see him thinking on the mound. The guy has, for lack of a better term, pitching wisdom that I've never seen at 22 years old. And I don't know what, you know, if he continues this, I mean, he's just lights out. I don't know how else to put it. And, you know, it's a great time to be alive, to be a Pirate fan, just to watch this guy.
Totally agree, Skip. Appreciate the call. Skip brought up some names, man. Now, see, I was young when Dwight Gooden broke in, but I was old enough to understand what was going on. Now, bear in mind, I grew up as a Pirate fan on the Muck the Fetts days. If you know, you know. But I also knew how good Dwight Gooden was. Like, we hated the Mets, but you didn't want to see Doc on the days Doc pitched. If you were facing Doc, it was lights out. You might as well forget it. Doc Gooden, at that time, when he first came up, he's right. Doc Gooden was lights out. Kerry Wood, I remember the 20 strikeout game for Kerry Wood at Wrigley. I remember that game. And I remember Kerry Wood just coming out as a house on fire in his rookie season. So those are two really good examples of guys that came up as rookies. I brought up another one too, and granted, I mentioned Hideo Nomo, but I talked about this maybe a couple weeks ago with Susie Cool on the Ireland Contracting Nightly Sports Call, which, by the way, I'll be there again tonight. Make sure you watch at 10:35 on KDKA+. I brought up Fernando Mania. And I want to say that was, what, the year I was born? Fernando Valenzuela was another guy who came up, house on fire. They put him out there, and he just lit the room up. I'm one of those guys. If I get a chance to see Paul Skeens, 22 years old, doing what he's doing, I'm going to stop what I'm doing and watch. And I guarantee you, Austin, I guarantee you, people who probably weren't that interested in watching the All-Star game, they're watching now.
I'm going to have a watch party.
Nice.
Text the boys.
Nice.
Get some popcorn ready because Paul Skeens is going to face Gunnar Henderson, Juan Soto, and Aaron Judge in the first inning.
I'm going to love this because I'm going to get home from work and I'll probably – now, here's the thing. I got to time this out right because bear in mind, I got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old at home. So the All-Star game is going to be happening sometime around dinner time, close to bath time. So I got to make sure I finagle this right with the missus so I don't miss the beginning of the All-Star game. So maybe it was one of those days, hey, put them in their high chairs and put them in the living room in front of the TV. I got to watch Paul Skeens pitch.
He is must-watch television. I've been to 3 of his starts. I was at his first day, the first game, his yes. MLB debut. It was so crazy, Josh. You see me decked out in my bulb and wiffle ball gear today. That we had opening day that day because it was Mother's Day weekend. So we usually play Sundays. So we moved it to Saturday. And then we found out Skeens was pitching. Our start time was at 4 o'clock. The game started at 4 o'clock. We played at 11 a.m. because, like, 10 of us all wanted to go to the game. In, like, a 45-person league, we changed the start time, and most of us went to the game right after because it was that big of an event that we felt like we had to go to.
I will always feel, like, privileged and blessed to be able to say I was there in the press box when Paul Skeens started his first game. I had two scorecards that day because, you know, you go into the press box, there's scorecards available so you can keep track that they leave in the press box so media can keep track in the game. Well, I took two. I had one that I filled out so I can follow along because I was anchoring that night. I'm anchoring that night, the night that Paul Skeens debuted. But I also kept a copy. I kept a copy because it was a scorecard that had all the printed names, who was starting, all the, you know, reserves and everything, but you get that printed lineup and then you get the printed name pitcher at the bottom where it says Skeens on it. I kept a copy of that scorecard with his name on it so I could say I was there when he made his debut. We're at the 50-minute mark on The Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19 in Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. It's I could talk about this for days. It's a no-brainer for me. This is, we talked about it, must-see television. This is Pedro in 98 mowing everybody down in Boston. This is Hideo Nomo in 95 as a rookie. This is what you want to see, the best pitcher in the game. on one of the biggest stages in the Midsummer Classic. That's what you want. That's what you pay for. And if you're there to see it, could you imagine being somebody who already had tickets going to this game? And now you find out you get to see Paul Skeens pitch? It's like Christmas in July. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, you're definitely thanking your lucky stars if you have tickets to that game. It's unbelievable.
It's the news of the day, man. I imagine that they're going to talk about this a lot on Pony and Mueller as well. It's news you want to hear around here. And I understand, and I know it's so easy. It's so easy to see Paul Skeens do something, and the first thing you think of, well, he'll be gone in 5 years. I call that the Mitch Hedberg principle. You know, it's the old Mitch Hedberg joke. Hey, Mitch, do you want an apple? No, eventually it'll be a core. You don't want to make everything a fatalist event, is my point. I watch Paul Skeens do what he does. I don't want to think about 5 years from now. I don't want to think about the negotiations for the next contract. I don't want to think about if there will be a next contract. I don't want to think about what team he ends up with next. I want to enjoy what I'm seeing right now. Because we are in the minority of fan bases where we can see this up close. Yes, I know you can watch pretty much every game now because technology has allowed that to be possible. But we have it in our backyard. We got it up close, live and in the living color. We get to see this for ourselves. Whatever happens down the road, let it be down the road. And I can already hear the, don't tell us how to be fans. I hear that crowd right now. You know what? Sit in the corner and wait. Just your time to be mad will come. Let the rest of us enjoy this for what this is. And this is where I admonish people, and I don't do this often. We're going to see something happen next week that doesn't happen often. And as Pirates fans, we get to witness your city's guy be the best guy in the game on the biggest stage of the game. Just enjoy it for what it is. Let's get a kick out of this. Austin's going to have a watch party. I'm going to be in the living room with my kids in their high chairs, probably eating pizza with my wife watching it. But this is one of those moments that you'll get to look back and say, I remember when. And it's one of those things you remember where you were when it happened. But if you're a Pirate fan and you get a chance to watch this, enjoy it, man, because it doesn't happen all the time. And we'll probably never get a chance to see this again. A generational talent like this on your team starting in the All-Star game, 22 years old, 11 starts under his belt. Like you said, this is thank your lucky stars. You just won the jackpot. It's like winning the lottery.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.